two papers to finish off. At the end of the day, it'll be Marin Tyrian, but first, Marina Canturuti. Marina, take it away.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Well, there's, before I say anything else, there's an e-handout. It's got one of the transcripts of one of the cases I'm going to be exploring in more detail, and though there will be other cases I will be discussing, so it's bit.ly/mccada. And I'm going to be sharing with you a little bit of the journey that I'm, as a third year PhD, I'm sort of like getting into. So I'm going to give you a sort of like preview of the narrative that I hope I'm going to be able to write about, and some of the cases and some of the ideas that hopefully, if you agree with me at the end of the presentation, support my bigger narrative. Everything you're going to see is work in progress, just in case. This is part of my PhD project on co-animations as associative practices in English interaction. And I'm working on 16 hours of spontaneous conversation, 5 hours from the Rossi corpus, and 11 hours of my own data collection process, direct recruitment, meaning I went and interrupted people as they were doing things, instead of asking them to come to me. And I have 112 associative animations, and I hope that by the end of today's presentation you will understand what that is supposed to mean. Because I'm Latin American and I talk too much, I don't want to deprive you of the final message and my data. So I'm going to begin with the final message, and I'm going to show you some data, and then I'll ramble on for a little bit. Charles will stop me if I've done too much talking. Hopefully, one of the things I wish to be able to prove is that co-animations are practices that participants deploy to negotiate entries into single units of participation, acting as a collectivity, as a team, or speaking on someone's behalf. This association that results from these co-animations will be displayed through a lot of work that is being done in the here and now of the interaction, but through that there and then of that animated space that is created. And I'll tell you more about this in a minute. And there is a lot of tension going on whenever there is association, because even if we work as a team, there's that residue of our individual contributions. So there's a lot of tension between distributed and individual or independent agency, and the resources deployed and the way in which they are deployed actually show that. And well, I'm going to show you how that happens. Particularly by looking at my data. So I'll begin with an example of what an associative animation is. This is Leona and Jesse. They're friends, they're postgraduate students, they're musicians. At this point, Leona has been giving some advice to Jesse on some things that he might implement in the music society that he's in. And they start hearing something, and what they hear is what occasions what follows.
Hi, you good? You're welcome.
I'll put you in the acknowledgements.
That's the weirdest noise I've ever heard. It sounds like
it's swallowed like a chew toy.
Or a metronome. Sounds like electronic metronome. Or a performance. It's got a very weird tempo. Ah yes, I play it to the clicking sound of a coot.
I just hit it roughly in time.
I love training stuff, actually.
So in this segment, and even before we get into the animation, we have a lot of evidence that there is conjoint participation happening, and quite early on. So we have this very first moment when they hear the noise, their gaze and their bodies are both directed into this object of joint attention, that is the coot, making that very, very strange noise. And this becomes a mentionable, a talkable topic, through Leona's first assessment, right, that we have first as a weird noise, yes? And this triggers a joint inferencing activity, a joint comparison activity. Leona starts introducing a comparison that gets cut off. This is line 3. Line 4, we get Jess coming in, right, making the most of that moment of possible trouble. He introduces his own idea, his own comparison, and Leona in line 6 incorporates that, but presents this as her own guess or her own inference as an alternative, right? So this becomes a metronome. And she actually gets agreement for this as she's starting to rephrase, right, her first guess, right, but in a fuller form, right? So some of the dispensables have been included in line 7. And she has, by line 8, secured an agreement, a joint agreement of what this sounds like. And this triggers the animation sequence that follows.
Metronome. Your performance, it's got a very weird tempo. Ah yes, I play it to the clicking just, sound of a coot.
I just hit it roughly in time.
Okay, so what we get is a very, very clear change of voice quality at the beginning. This is line 10, there is a very audible in-breath. There is a very, very clear change in posture from the coot back to Jesse. Jesse is not engaging back with her at the moment she begins saying you're. And he actually engages back with her again while he's saying performance. And here we have a very interesting thing. We have an accented you're, which could be a sort of pointing element, and it's not taken as direct address, right? So this could be a way by, in terms of Jesse, Jesse's orienting to this being a shift of some kind. And this can be marked with the change of voice quality. She introduces this other voice, the voice of someone who is assessing her performance or the performance of this version of self that she constructs in line 11. And then in line 12, we have this version of self that responds to the voice in lines 10 and 11. We can see there that we have some attempts already in line 13, and this is repeated in line 15, for Jesse sort of like chiming in into this animation. And if we look at his lips, well, which you cannot see at the moment, but there is evidence that what gets produced in 17 was actually being started in 13 and 15. And this means that his following co-animation, and now I'll say something about 17 and 18 and 20, seem to be hooked, seem to be tied into what actually happened in line 11, right? As an answer to line 11. So we have this I just in line 17. That I, again, is not treated as problematic, it's not treated as just being himself, but being the voice that is being animated, or that has just been animated by Leona. And we have the word hit it, we have the pronoun it. The referent of the pronoun it has to be found clearly in the animation that came before. And then ruffling time, and this is oriented to by both as a sort of laughable. So this becomes a joint animation, and this is the kind of things I'm interested in. So some theory on what's going on. Well, I'm interested in a phenomenon which is not very, let's say, original, if we look at all the different approaches from different perspectives as to, well, reported speech, and all the different names that have been given obviously respond to the different theoretical perspectives and angles into that have actually studied this. But in particular, what interests me is the two core notions of the phenomenon, which is, on the one hand, this deictic displacement. So we have the here and now of the interaction, and we have the projection of a there and then. We have an animated space that is simultaneous. This is happening at the same time. And all this lamination and all these layers happening at the same time, right? So all these voices that are being animated have bear with them a lot of the stance elements of the here and now that are going to be negotiated in the here and now, while the there and then is projected. And that's why I always say my thesis is like this movie Inception, because I always need to get into all these different levels of things that are going on. And obviously, we're all familiar with Goffman, and I'm definitely familiar with all the limitations of the model by Goffman. And I'm also not, I don't find it, I still cannot get the most of, or make the most of Levinson's own proposal to explain what's going on. But what we do know what some things that are happening here is that we have a joint author and that we have a joint animator. And the role of a principal is perhaps what is negotiated a little bit in the here and now, whereas in the there and then we clearly have some of those roles more clearly presented. But these are some of the questions that I still have, so this is why this is a lot. There's a lot of work in progress when it comes to the roles and how they're managed. I also said earlier that I'm interested in association and collectivities, and we know that association is about individuals working as a team, working as single units of participation. And we know from previous studies by Hitzinger and Lerner, and well, Lerner and Taki, for example, that anticipatory completions and choral productions are forms in which we show to each other that we're part of the same team, that we're acting as a collectivity. So I want to propose that co-animations are also resources by which participants can engage in this joint unit of participation. So a co-animation happens when B continues an A-animated TCU, mostly in a responsive slot, in a way that they are doing being A by doing being the persona that A has just been doing being. And why is it that I'm not just claiming that that B is doing being the persona alone, and that actually B is also doing being A doing being the persona? Well, that has got to do with the positioning of these co-animations. And I'll tell you more about it in a second. So this is another inception moment. So what can I say about, and this is sort of like overview, very quick overview of what I hope will become the chapters of my analytic chapters. In my collection, if I look at my 112 cases, I can definitely define my cases into two big groups. Many of them are preemptive responses. They happen as choral productions or anticipatory completions. So we have these as already associative resources being used for co-animation. And many of those that are not really preemptive, as I like to call them, they are post-completion. And when I say post-completion, I mean that I'm going to make a strong point that they're actually turn-sharing practices, even when A has closed their turn. And why do I say that? Because these practices happen to be mostly other extensions, collaborative lists, and what I call other reformulations, but I don't have time to get into those today. Just to give you some ideas, this is an example of an other extension. I'll play it very quickly for you.
Put my back up for a solid couple of weeks. I had to go to the nurse to be like, can you show me any physio exercises and just give me a load of painkillers, please? Dying, yeah. Because I was so scared.
Okay, so here we have cause I'm dying. Yes, clearly I'm is not treated as Dan, the co-participant, but Dan doing being John in that situation. I have examples of co-animations as choral productions. This is by far my favorite case. It's a pity I don't have time to explain.
Yeah, they've got the Stone of Destiny. The Stone of Scoon. It's spelled scone, but you say scoon.
Scoon is better than scone.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Is it scone or scone? No.
Scoon.
That's a little jewel that I have. And then collaborative lists.
Things that,
yeah.
What I need to do after exams, and literally all those kind of little things that you need to do. I'm the worst, because especially on exam week, it'd be like, my washing and stuff, it's like building up, and I'm like, no, I'll do it after exam. And it's just like, by the end, my whole life is just chaos, because I'm just like, I need
like
to learn.
There's no food in the fridge,
yeah.
I've got no clean pants.
I've been living off pizza for the last week.
I haven't been to the gym in a month.
I know.
It's true.
That's why I'm going to, this.
Okay. So in terms of position, we can see that a lot of tension happening, which I unfortunately cannot get into, in issues that have to do with the opportunity spaces that are created for in terms of the projectability, in terms of the incoming, how much access does B have to what A is getting into before they actually produce their co-animation. This can be an interactional risk. The earlier, the more risky it might be. These are clearly contiguous, and this helps to make them hearable as co-animations, unambiguously, which is amazing, actually. We have this reversal of speakership and listenership, because we have this third slot that is created for confirmation, right? And then basically A has to confirm the completion or the recompletion of their own animation, or the animation that they started and someone else finished. They're generally affiliative. I have my aligning is for another presentation, alignment. And there is a sort of entitlement redress, because in this third position, there is acceptance and rejection slot, not just of the content, but also, as Antaki and colleagues have shown, of the footing that is proposed. And just in terms of composition, there are lots of things going on which are super, super rich in the co-animations that get occasioned and how they are actually resolved. There are different semantic processes of deletion, transformation, and preservation and continuation of the original animation, and this unproblematic deictic displacement. There's a lot going on in terms of prosody. There are processes of matching, continuation, and upgrading and downgrading of the prosodic parameters. And in terms of embodied behavior, many of these co-animations are incorporated into the gestural trajectories of their co-participants, or they can continue those trajectories, or they can even imitate them. And just to give you, going back to the examples that we have just seen, if we look at the collaborative list that we had before, there is a matching of, well, in this case, the tens, even though there is some tension between in line 13, I, in line 15, we, and then the other co-participant going back to I, right? But there is some symmetry, and there are some elements that have been transformed, preserved, and deleted. And if we look at the second continuation that we had, the other extension, clearly cause I'm dying hinges on or is syntactically embedded on and just give me a load of painkillers, right? And it happens in overlap with please, which is a good place to come in, a legitimate place to come in. In terms of prosodic matching and continuation, I'll play this again, but if you take a look at the, you have some lines in color. The red line is Angie and the blue line is Karen. You can see the same kind of level, lower level, higher level intonation, typical list intonation. There's prosodic matching there, and I'll play it for you. You will notice that Angie's contribution matches prosodically what Karen has been doing.
Chaos, because I'm just like,
there's no food in the fridge, yeah. I've got no clean pans.
I've been living off peas for the last week.
I haven't been to the gym in a month.
No.
It's true.
Okay, so we've got some
chaos, because I'm just like,
So you can see clearly matching of voice quality, falsetto voice quality, and also the intonation. And if we go back to my favorite case, it's going to go a bit too quickly, but just to give you an idea, if we look at the speaker on the left, she's going to be introducing this scoon example that we saw earlier. There are some interesting things happening, and you will notice that when they both say scoon, they both lean forward, and they have mutual gaze. But there are lots of things happening before that. I'm going to play that very, very quickly.
Oh, I love it. Is it scone or scone? No,
scoon.
I'll play it again. There's something fantastic happening. If you will notice that the speaker on the right is following the rhythmic pattern with her thumb, right? Which is absolutely amazing. So rhythm, there's rhythmic integration here.
Oh, I love it. Is it scone or scone? No,
scoon.
So each of those four beats is followed, and so this is amazing. Don't have time for this, but this is absolutely fascinating. But there is a lot of tension, as I was saying earlier, between what gets taken up from previous animation and what gets transformed. And obviously the participants have to find ways of creating coherence with the previous turn, making this hearable as an animation, the continuation of the animation that has been going on. And obviously, there are different levels of blending and incorporation into the first animation that are happening here, where other levels retain those elements of independent agency. So just to expand my take-home messages, the ones I gave you at the beginning, we can see that through co-animations, we have B co-animating the voice that A has just been doing being. And in this way, you also do B, A doing being that voice. And this aggregation into the collectivity is either accepted or rejected by the first animation in a third position that is created for this end. It is mostly generally the case that there is a third position. And as a result, we have turn sharing practices that result in collaborative turn sequences. Now, through this joint animation in the there and then of that created animated space, we have affiliation in the here and now, and there is a sort of shared stance that is being negotiated and projected, right? We know that the design of the turn may preserve some features of the original animation, transform, delete, continue features of the original animation. And the position offers different degrees of access to this projected content or stance. So there are different kinds of interactional risks when it comes to producing an animation before the other animation is finished or once the other animation is finished. And finally, the position and the design then of the co-animation orient to those features of those first animations. And clearly, the more blended a co-animation is, right, the greater levels of distributed agency that participants seem to be displaying with each other. So, and I won't have time to expand on this, but I believe that animations become interactional objects that get manipulated, and that's because of the very nature of reported speech as something that creates detachment and distance in a way, not in the social arena, right? So it's quite, yeah, it's a bit tricky. I mean, I haven't phrased it very well, but they get manipulated for social ends and for reasons I won't be able to explain today, but they actually clearly bypass epistemic and entitlement differentials. So affiliation becomes really, really strongly the issue there. And as a result, these interactional objects become co-owned by the participants as a shared object. So yeah, so this is all I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. I think I did all right. I don't know how I did in time.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Marie. Thank you. There for observation, comment, questions.
Yes. Could you say a little bit more about what you were saying about the becoming more blended?
Yeah.
And is that more of the features that you were describing before, or could you just say more about that?
Yeah. I was thinking of blending in terms of position and composition. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the positioning, blending in terms of mostly for preemptive co-animations.
So when they come in.
When they come in, and they come in at the opportunity spaces created by either compound TCUs or highly projectable structures. And in many of my cases, those are accompanied by very, very clear rhythmic integration. So it's the next beat, and they continue the rhythm. Or they have a very, very clear continuation of the line of declination, sometimes even accompanied by, in one of my cases, what I have is the co-participant was doing a certain trajectory, retracting his body. Mm-hmm. And when the co-animation begins, that speed stops, and he doesn't go back to home position until the co-animation has finished. So we have elements that are
sort of embodied and timing and prosody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, obviously, the extent to which we can say they sound as one, has got to do with how they both manage all those resources.
Emily.
Would you elaborate on the fancy case and the thumb? Because it's amazing.
Yes. It's one of those fantastic findings that happen once in a lifetime. But obviously, this is highly projectable in terms of what came before. I think I'll go back to the... First, I'll go back to the transcript. There are lots of elements of projectability, obviously, in the way this is built, because there is a contrast being built quite early on between scone and the scone, the typical British debate, and scoon. And obviously, this is a highly projectable element by the time it comes in. We have line 14, Evie introducing this, I love it, sort of preface, if you wish, into the interactional space, this click. And then we have very clear, I'll play it again in a second, but we have these very, very clear beats, rhythmic beats. So is it scone or scone? No, scone. There's perfect, well, I don't have it at hand, but I have measured, and there's very, they're almost isochronous, relatively, in absolute terms. The distance between scone, no, and scone, almost perfect. The starting point of the scone, I've measured that, the sa sound almost beginning at the same point. And what we see is that this projectability that happens not just at the level of the actual wording and this contrast that was introduced earlier, it happens also in terms of those beats are accompanied by four different kinds of movements. I'll play it in a minute. And while this is happening, each of those movements accompanying each of those beats are also being marked as a sort of like metronome-like. Clearly, they are beyond Evie's reach, but this is definitely something that we know that she's orienting to that rhythm so that she can come in at the right time. I'll play the...
Oh, I love it. Is it scone or scone? No.
Scone.
Oh, I love it. Is it scone or scone? No.
Scone.
Yeah. Four beats, four movements. She's following that and they come in at the same time. They both lean forward. It's amazing. It's amazing, isn't it?
I wondered why, whether you contrast individual with distributed as opposed to individual with shared, and I wondered whether you have chosen to refer to it as distributed agency rather than shared agency.
I'm actually following Nick Enfield's distinction. Well, I haven't given it enough thought to be entirely honest. Can you?
Well, your point about this is not a deeply thought through point, but your point about the more kind of blended, the more distributed agency. You say, well, actually, what you're saying is the more blended, the more the agency of the doing is being shared between them, rather than distributed. So it's just it's a nuance of words. Have you looked at Paul Koppelman's stuff on Paul Koppelman's work on the commentary on Goffman's speaker roles is useful?
Thank you.
I'm going to abuse my position again. You mentioned right at the end, rather teasing thought, that the epistemics were put to one side. But I wondered in at least some of your examples whether they hadn't first established a general intersubjective view of the matter in order to allow them both to proceed with this complicated and multifaceted completion on fairly secure grounds.
I see that. Well, I think I wanted to say is perhaps what becomes slightly bypassed is the epistemic authority in terms of what I see in most of these co-animations. Well, the examples I brought are mostly imaginary, but I have examples of co-animations in tellings and in complaints, which haven't been experienced by the co-participants, and they freely produce co-animations, and this is not treated as sanctionable in any way, and they're not held accountable for creating, producing a version of things that they haven't experienced themselves. So yeah, I would say that yes, perhaps that comment would have to be applied to those cases in which there is clearly a clear differential.
But even in those non-fictional cases, have they, before they launch into the co-animation, established that they both have the same stance towards the thing that's going to be recounted now?
I'm not entirely sure about that. I think that this through the co-animation, you actually propose a candidate stance as well, and this becomes negotiated, but I'm not really sure. I have to think further about it. I'm not sure. Yeah. Thank you.
As we're doing the last comment, perhaps Meryn could come up and just prepare. Yes, so
I was wondering if you found consistency where these appear in larger packages of talk.
Can you rephrase?
Conclusion. Do they occur in places where we might expect conclusions of stories? I'm thinking.
Well, I was actually, when I first looked at my whole collection, I was actually expecting this to happen mostly during extended tellings. This is not the case, necessarily the case. They do happen in around climaxes of stories, but also at points in which there's some degree of understanding that needs to be secured before the next stage of a story is presented. But this also happens as a result of external factors. And in general, those are the more extended kinds of contributions. In most cases, they're just conditional entry co-animations, but in cases of something happens and they elaborate on that and they create a scenario on that, and that becomes something bigger. But I don't have as many tellings as I was expecting to have.
Thank you. Thank you, Marina.
Thank you.